My name is Sarah Kim, and I'm from Austin, Texas. I'm a Cheeselandian because while life is great, cheese makes it better. Go to Cheeselandia.com to learn more, and if it's for you, sign up.
This week on Meat and Three, we head into the second part of our mini-series on global trade, where we talk about all things sweet, from chocolate and sugarcane to the cultural festival that accompanied the growth of the date industry in the U.S.
They're using this romance and fantasy to say, dates are exotic and you should consume them.
I like to think of the food that we eat as archaeological artifacts, in part because the history of humanity is in the stands in your produce market.
It's not like other foods. We have very, personal feelings about chocolate.
Tune in to Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you get your podcasts.
So on this episode of Soul by Todd Richards, I really wanted to welcome a really great guy. I mean, when I say great, this dude can cook. He's personable. I've seen his IG. I'm jealous by all the food that he cooks. One of the young lions that are coming up, and he's out of Miami. And anyone has followed the podcast thus far, we've had a lot of people from Atlanta, Chicago, and even New York come in, but no one from Miami yet. So this is going to be a first. His full name is Cleophas, but he goes by Chef Ophus. And Chef Ophus, welcome to Soul by Todd Richards.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you having me, Chef. Been looking forward to it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Yeah, so what's going on down in Miami, you know, in this COVID environment, first of all, and just want to give the listeners a great understanding of where we're at. We're after the election, so Biden is in office, and you and I are talking right now, and we're talking about COVID to begin with. And I know you were in Atlanta for a while, but you went back home to Miami. What's happening down in Miami right now?
I would say Miami is just as open as Atlanta is right now. You know, restaurants are starting to slowly open. I mean, well, not slowly. They're really opening back up at whether they're current establishments or they're new restaurants. You know, right now I've been working and helping out at a new restaurant opening down here for the last couple of weeks. You know, people are out and about, just, you know, I won't say everybody's out like they used to be, but, you know, it's definitely a good crowd of people frequenting this restaurant since it is a pretty popular establishment.
Right. So, I mean, how is it though? I mean, I know the sun is out, you know, convertibles are there. Everyone wants to be balling down there. What is the life, you know, the nightlife like? Is it still like Miami, like everyone wants to go down there? Or is it, you know, tamed down just a little bit?
I mean, I definitely think that, you know, because everybody hasn't been able to take their usual trips out of the country because of all the sanctions or the travel bans that's been in place, that, like, you know, people have been coming to South Florida for a while, you know, and it's crazy to see the amount of people that's on the beaches and even just walking around in certain areas like Wynwood and Brickell, because it's, you know, you're like still like, wow, it's a pandemic. And, you know,
but Miami didn't get the notice, right?
nah, I mean, it doesn't seem like it, you know, because it's been nonstop, you know, like there was a little break here and there, like, you know, of course, like around May and June, but like ever since like all these curfews and these bans have been lifted, restaurants have been open, people are out eating, drinking on the beaches, just having fun, like, and it's been nonstop. And for myself, like, you know, I go to work and I go home. You know, I'm just trying to keep safe and healthy as possible, you know?
Right. I definitely can understand being safe. You know, I had COVID in March of 2020, and it took about 6 months to recover from it. So, you know, I try to tell everyone to be safe. But it seems like Miami said, damn, being safe, let's open and have a good time in that same Miami style. So it's good that you're still safe down there and still cooking. But, you know, let's get a little background to people, you know, who may not be totally familiar with who you are. Where did you start cooking?
I mean, my first job was cooking at Yardbird Southern Table and Bar back in, like, I just started. I've only been cooking now 10 years, almost 11 years. Mm-hmm. And that was my first job back here in Miami. And that was, what, 2010? Mm-hmm. You know, and I always tell people, interviews or just, and you know, whatever, like that restaurant set the foundation for my cooking career. Because I learned so much because I didn't go to culinary school.
Well, neither did I. So don't worry about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and I'm not the hugest, biggest proponent for culinary school either, because, you know, it's expensive. But, you know, I started cooking there. And from there, like, you know, I left there. I went to work at the Cypress Room, which is, you know, it's now closed, but it was a restaurant, like super fine dining that Michael Swartz that was opening down here. You know, and I worked there for about a year and, you know, eventually was my first transition to Atlanta. And I moved up to Atlanta and worked at the Optimist for about 2 years, a part of the opening team there, as a cook. You know, and eventually after 2 years at the Optimist, I went up to New York. I worked at John George for about a good 8 months, his three Michelin restaurant. And then, you know, from there, I made my way back home to Miami. And, you know, I've just been in and around Miami, you know, from like, that was like 15 up until about 18. Right. When I migrated back to Atlanta again. And, you know,
you can't stay away from the A. I mean, you can't stay away from ATL. Most people can't. I'm just asking you, like how would you leave Miami to come to Atlanta? But you know, we won't go too far in it. I came for Freaknik, so I have no problem saying
that. Oh,
wow. So I'm showing my age too, you know, in saying that. But let's talk about Yarbrough right quick, because it's one of the most iconic restaurants, you know, in the United States, probably worldwide. I would say most people would know Yarbrough worldwide. You know, what was it like just, you know, working in that kitchen for the first time, it being your first job, understanding that some of the food that they're cooking, you know, could be something that you might have learned from your grandmother or someone else, and they're making it popular. What was it really like being in that kitchen for the first time?
It was very intimidating. Like for me, like I was scared because here it is. I'm, you know, like I did 5 years in the Navy out of high school. And then from the Navy after 2005, I went to college, worked in public health for about 8 years. And then I hopped into cooking, not having any semblance or idea what it took to work in the culinary industry. And at that time, like, Yardbird had a kitchen full of rock stars, like every cook, sous chef, you know, they're awesome. And, you know, again, like I said, I credit a lot of the people I worked with back then with just like who I've become now as a cook and, you know, as a chef. And, you know, learning just how we applied all these French techniques and cooking skills to, like you said, like food that I grew up eating, or that was similar to a lot of food I grew up eating, you know, from my grandmother and my mom and my aunts and uncles. So getting that understanding that, like, I can take these techniques that I'm learning and apply it to some of, you know, the foods that I grew up eating was, like, kind of, like, mind-blowing to me at the time.
Absolutely.
And then at the same time, it opened my mind up because I remember, you know, because we used to have to do overnight prep because we were just so busy. And the original kitchen is so small. It's basically a line kitchen. It's a front line, a back line. So we had to do overnight prep. And I just remember, like, walking into work one night and they're telling me, like, oh, we got nominated for a James Beard. And I'm like, what the hell is a James Beard? You know?
All right.
But that's just how much clue I didn't have about what I was getting into as I jumped head first into cooking. So it was quite a eye-opening experience. You know, I worked with them for about 2 years and, you know, I sucked as much knowledge and skill as I can out of that place. And, you know, they almost essentially ran me out of there because I used to always spend so much time in there and, you know, my chef eventually told me, he's like, you know, you gotta you know, got to let the birds.
You got to spread your wings, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that's eventually
that, you know,
what
that
I did.
Any chef that doesn't do that, you know, any chef that doesn't do that for their cooks is very selfish, in my opinion. You know, like I always tell my cooks after a while, you know, 2 years, you got to go. You can always come back, but you just can't stay here. You know, it's really, you know.
Yeah, come
you know,
back and eat.
You know, yeah, yeah. And. Or come back and cook, you know. I mean, a lot of people who are in my kitchen have been with me off and on for a long time. But it's really, you know, the responsibility of any great chef to make sure that the cooks have a long life and a long journey in this business, which we all found difficult to navigate through as youngsters coming up. But let me ask you this one more question about Yarbrough. You know, how is it in comparison when you think about, you know, the food that, you know, you cooked at home with your grandmother and your uncles and everything like that? And then you see $36 fried chicken on the plate. And I'm not knocking them because I believe that, you know, fried chicken is one of the hardest techniques to perfect. And it damn sure, you know, commands a hefty price when it's done right. But just, you know, as a young cook seeing that, you know, how did you rationale the life of cooking $36 fried chicken?
At the time, I couldn't even fathom it. I was like, what are y'all doing?
All right.
You know, like.
No one in your family could come eat, right?
I mean, I suffice to say that, like, we used to take bets about the amount of Black people that would come into Yarbrough and eat.
Oh, my goodness.
Because it was, you know, I mean, I was, like, the only Black person in the kitchen at the time, but, like, you know, that was always like my ongoing theory is just like, this is not approachable. But now that's completely changed now to compare to what Yardbird is if you walk into one. But right. At the time, yeah, it was like I was confused, you know, from everything that I understood of what people thought and felt about soul food. Like, I didn't know that it can be priced at this point. I didn't know it could be like made to feel and look so good, so to speak, you know, because the way we cook now is, you know, you want to bring some type of creativity and artistic value to it that almost, you know, creates that idea and that thought process in people's mind that they're getting, you know, what they, you know, they're spending their worth.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, the cocktail program was always, you know, A on point. The wine list. I mean, I've eaten there, you know, a few times. So I'm not knocking them for what they do. I love exactly what they do because when I opened up my own fried chicken place, I immediately, you know, thought to bring the prices up. But, you know, I want to pivot just a little bit and then, you know, going out of that kitchen and we'll skip the Optimus. We'll come back to that. But, you know, going to Jean George, you know, from a place where you're cooking traditional Southern food, maybe, or more modern Southern food, even soul food in a sense, to going into a 3 Michelin star restaurant. What was was there a lot of similarities, you think, or were there just structural differences in working in that kitchen?
Oh, it was a complete structural difference. Like, I mean,
I thought you would say that.
It's I mean, one thing I learned with working with John George Group is the meticulously consistency of every little thing. Like, you know, every recipe is written exactly the same. It's procedures and steps have to be followed from one step to the next before you finally even get down to step 4. And you can't do one before you do 3. You know, and just that it brought, I always say it rounded out my edges. But it also made me realize a lot of things that, like, I enjoy about this industry, and it helped define me even more as a chef, or I'm not even say as chef, but as a cook, because it challenged parts of me that, like, I didn't even know that, like, I even had yet, you know?
Let me ask, what station did you start with? I mean, I'm curious. I'm sure listeners are going to be curious as well. What station did you start with in that kitchen? Or maybe give a little even background of the number of stations in that kitchen.
I started on Pantry. Just like, you know, originally just really picking herbs and being a backup for the chef de partie. And that's all I did for almost like 3 or 4 months.
Wow.
Just like, you know, picking herbs, doing knife cuts, making sure the chef de partie were ready and set. And, you know, there were about, I think, 7 different stations in there at the time.
Wow. I mean, and that's typical in the brigade system, but to think of, I just want to make sure that listeners understand this. So in the brigade system, you know, you have the executive chef, chef de cuisine, you have sous chefs, then you have chef de partie who are basically lead line cooks for, you know, in general terms. And then you go down to having cooks, and then you have, you know, backup cooks or commis, you know, who actually support the chef de partie on their station. And you're saying that your first 3 to 4 months was actually just in support of the person that's cooking, not actually doing cooking.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and like I said, that's where the challenging part came in, because, you know, you've worked in 3 pretty great kitchens prior to coming there. And you think you've already arrived to an extent. So like for me, it was a bit of a, you know, a humbling experience going there and just having to like shrink my maybe well grown ego back to right. Just being a support for someone else who's even better than I am already, even though I think I was halfway decent at the time.
Well, that makes sense, though. I mean, you just left a, you know, James Beard nominated restaurant. You were at the Optimist before you went to Jean Georges. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, just going to Optimist first, you know, with Ford Fry, you know, who's a local Atlanta restaurateur, and then going there. I mean, you would think that you were hot shit already, you know?
So, I mean, but essentially, like, my first 3, well, technically my first 4 restaurants, because 50 Eggs, which owns Yardbird, they opened Kong River House. And I helped open up Kong River House. So you had Yardbird and Kong River House basically in the first 2.5 years of that company, that restaurant group opened, had been nominated for James Beard's. And then I went to the Cypress Room, which was by, you know, Chef Michael Swartz, who himself won a James Beard for Michael's Genuine. We got nominated for best. I mean, we were on that best new restaurant list with Bon Appetit and Optimist that year. And so it was just like in succession, all these 4 great restaurants that I worked at in like literally like my first 4.5 years of cooking. And then, like I said, going to Jean Georges and realizing like, no, you have not arrived yet, son.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it was, like I said, it was a humbling experience. It definitely took me back. It knocked me down a couple steps. And, but, you know, they built me back up at the same time, too.
Well, we're going to take a quick break right now. We're going to come back with Chef Ofis. You're listening to Soul by Todd Richards.
My name is Sarah Kim, and I'm from Austin, Texas. I'm a Cheeselandian because while life is great, cheese makes it better. Wisconsin cheese has proven time and time again to be a delicious expression of craft, hard work, and tradition. As a Cheeselandian, I am able to share a Gouda experience with fellow cheese and food lovers nationwide, as well as connect with cheese producers and cheesemongers, taking my love of cheese to another level. I invite you to join Cheeselandia because during these difficult times, it has been even more important to take it easy and get cheesy. The Cheeselandia community and events have been the glue helping to keep us together and connected, and I would love it if you would join me. And let's face it, if you hear the word cheese and get a little hungry, then you've found a place you can call home. To find out more about Cheeselandia, go to cheeselandia.com.
So we're back on Soul by Todd Richards with a great chef, Chef Ofis, who, you know, has been with Jean Georges, he's been at Yardbird, he's been at Optimist, one of the best restaurants, I think, still in Atlanta. And, you know, previously we were talking about him leaving this group where he worked under 3, you know, well, 2 James Beard nominated restaurants, another nominated restaurant, and then went to Jean Georges and was really working just basically in the pantry station. And I really want to get an understanding is that in working in a 3 Michelin star restaurant, James Beard award-winning restaurants, what is your cooking style that came out of working in all these type of restaurants?
Well, at the time, like, my food was very Eurocentric focus. I love and I gravitated towards just the Mediterranean and the south of Italy at the time. Mm-hmm. And that's what I just enjoyed and loved cooking. When I left those restaurants, I took everything that I learned and, you know, brought a bit of simplicity back to like how I cooked in a sense. Like it wasn't as strategical. It wasn't as calculated. It was just more of a free flowing style that you tend to see and, you know, off in the Mediterranean and, you know, the south of Italy. They just
and what year was this? I just want to make sure that we have a good reference point. What year is this that you're talking about when you started really developing this type of cooking style?
This was like around 2015, 16.
Okay. Yeah, so 5-6 years ago. That's okay. That's great understanding.
Yeah, and for me it was what I was enjoying doing at the time. Like I got the opportunity because John George, they were just opening up a restaurant. I mean, we were opening up several outlets and a new hotel that was opening in Miami Beach. So that's even how I ended up back home in Miami, because they opened up the Matador Room Market and the Tropical outlets inside the Edition Hotel. And, you know, that brought me back home to Miami and working there and just continuing to expound on the, you know, the skills and the knowledge that I had just picked up from being in New York at, you know, at his flagship restaurant. So it was quite an experience. And, you know, in totality, you know, I worked under, you know, that umbrella for about, you know, two and a half years or so.
Wow. I mean, that experience alone is just so fascinating. I mean, to have that. And I believe that, you know, I know your background, but just to have listeners to understand that here he is, we're talking to African-American chef from Miami, a Navy guy who, you know, is self-taught and went to, you know, 3 James Beard restaurants, 1 3-star Michelin restaurant, and came back to Miami. Because I don't want to run out of time and not talking about this, but I really want to talk about your pop-ups, because I became a big fan of yours just in watching your IG pop-ups. And what really brought you to doing pop-ups? Because I believe you started doing them at a time before pop-ups were really just even popular in the lore of American foodways. What made you really start doing pop-ups?
Before I get to the pop-ups, like what really started me even finding my current identity as in cooking, you know, I just now tell people I just cook Black people food, but, you know, to be more exact, you know, food of Pan-African cuisine or of the African diasporic foodways, was I saw Mind of a Chef season 2 with Sean Brock. Mm-hmm. In episode 8, he traced some of the food that he grew up eating in the foothills of Virginia back to Senegal. Mm-hmm. And I remember watching that and being like, what the hell? Like, I am a Black young man cooking, living in Atlanta at the time when that season came out. And I was just like, I don't know jack about the history of my ancestors and the foodways that we have lived upon. And, you know, and from that point on, like, it just drove me to start just digging in and researching, traveling, and just digesting, watching YouTube, buying countless books, and just trying to get a better understanding of my ancestors and the food that we have currently evolved into, which isn't what we are.
So let's just pause right there, because this is great conversation to have here. Because in full disclosure, Sean is a great friend of mine. I would say our livers are probably even better friends, as much whiskey we used to drink together. you know, but you know, just, you know, looking at someone like that who went back to Senegal and started, you know, understanding these dishes, and you saying that you were just blown away that he, you know, found ways back to Africa and you didn't, but also you were at Yardbird and you were cooking food of our ancestors and it didn't necessarily resonate with the diners who came into there. And then you started doing these pop-ups. Did you have a different audience, or did you have an audience that didn't necessarily come to Yardbird at your pop-ups more than before, as necessarily the clientele at a Yardbird or a Jean George or even Optimus?
I actually, when I first started doing it, it was actually more of, you know, it was people of Caucasian persuasion, and it was more of the Latin crowd. Black people weren't really jiving with me, you know. That's just trying to put it nicely. just because they were built out of a tasting menu style. They were built out of a coursed out meal style. I was using words that wasn't quite approachable to our demographic, you know, my cousins, my friends, you know, their friends and friends demographics. So at the beginning, like when I, you know, because originally, like, I had all sorts of names before I eventually became Ebby Chop Bar. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the beginning, I started working with Dinner Lab. That's how I really, like, I did two or so on my own, very low key. And then I would say I was like kind of that second wave of chefs behind Kwame, who started working with Dinner Lab, but came in like right before they, you know, declared bankruptcy.
Right. So give listeners just a background. Dinner Lab was a corporate type of pop-up restaurant that was really, you know, almost countrywide. And they took the pop-up culture and really expanded it even more. Go ahead, Chef.
Yeah. So Dinner Lab basically helped me cultivate how to efficiently run a pop-up dinner. And, you know, once I, you know, they went out of business, I just took what I learned from them and expounded upon it. You know, I, you know, just started, you know, and for me, doing the pop-ups was my ability to get out my creative voice. But not only that, it was a lot about just being educational and mm-hmm. and digging into the history, because I, you know, just in general, I love history. So being able to digest all the history of things that I am like extremely passionate about, which is just like, you know, the culture of, you know, the African Americans and African diaspora was like a joyous occasion to me. So you know, I would do 6, 8, 10, 12 course dinners. And like in each course was paired with a wine. It was paired with a spirit, a cocktail that, that we would create, you know, and in between each course was always an explanation. It was always a reason for the conceptualization of this dish, or why we use this ingredient, you know, why we chose to interpret it this way.
Let's I just want to give reference point too. So your 6-course menu started at what? I mean, it was what, 7,500? How much was it for your 6-course menu?
6 courses, we started out at, back then, it was about like $80.
Okay, and then you went up to 12 courses. Wait, $80, so did that include beverage or no?
Yeah, that includes.
Man, that's a value already, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you get 6 courses of beverage. I mean, that's $80 in most places by itself. And then the 12 courses, how many?
12 courses, we got up to about 150.
I mean, that's still with including beverage.
Yeah. It was a steal.
Wow. And what year did you really gain popularity with the pop-ups?
2017.
Yeah, I want to make sure that my crack research team, meaning myself, was absolutely correct in thinking it was about 2017.
That's about the time, like, I think we first connected on like social media. And
yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, so, And
what about that team, though? You had a team, though, that really worked with you. Why did you have this team of people that, I mean, you had all types of chefs coming in doing these pop-ups with you. Why did you, you know, choose these chefs, and what were you all really trying to accomplish besides just serving delicious food? I think there's an educational piece that you all were trying to touch on as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of these guys were... they were guys who I had worked with, or, you know, people who had just hit me up on social media who had saw what I was doing. And for me, it was always because what I've even found just in a lot of Black chefs, you know, we all don't get the same opportunity to go work in these higher end kitchens. And for me, it was always about, you know, not just opening their minds of creativity on the cuisine that we all have eaten, but also just giving them a little bit more exposure to how we can be just as creative with our food that we grew up eating and just as much as the food that we're cooking every day in these restaurants or hotels. So I always try to, you know, get my homeboys that I've cooked with in the past right. and the present. You know, and at the same time, they were guys who I trusted. Like, I know no matter what, like if I had to go run to the grocery store as we were prepping the day before, that mm-hmm. they were going to take just as much pride as in, you know, when we did braised rabbit, pulling that meat and making sure those tiny bones that break off and those fragile from the fragile bones of a rabbit right. are not in that meat, you know? So it was little things like that that also played a part in it because, you know, like they took pride in my success just as much as I, you know, I took pride as in, you know, having them there. And
isn't that just a central role, though, of a chef to take pride in the staff and to ensure that the staff is taking pride in you?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, if you got, you know, in the same sense, you got happy chefs, happy cooks, you got happy and great food, you know, which means you got happy guests. And for me, like, it's always important just to, like, I love teaching in a sense because I come from a family of educators at the same time. So for me, it's always important not just to, you know, harness the knowledge or hog all the knowledge to myself, but to, you know, share the wealth, you know, like, Even if it's just with my, you know, guests, like you go touch a table, like I'm 9 times out of 10, like I'm breaking into song or story about like why this dish is on this menu and why you need to enjoy it and appreciate it that much more. Because for me, like it's always a story to be told, you know, in food, you know, and it's just, you know, finding out how
to story to be told in food, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So.
So let's talk about, you know, right now in 2020, 2021, and I'm, you know, still amazed by, you know, the path that you took. It's similar to mine in the sense of the kitchens that I worked in, but also I think you have a lot more adventurous and going out on your own. You probably struck out on your own a little bit earlier than I did. Do you think pop-ups are going to come back in this climate of COVID, even though, you know, the vaccines are coming out and things like that? Do you believe that that they will be something that will return back to the mainstream dining scene?
Yeah, I definitely do. But I think even as myself, as I think about moving forward and trying to do more pop-ups, it's like I know I have to re-image how I do my dinners, you know? Like, I probably won't be doing tasting menus. It'll probably be more of an a la carte or family meal style thing.
But why is that, though? Because I know that you're known for tasting menus, but now you're saying that you might even pivot to a different style of service. Why do you think that's so important to do?
Because I want to be accommodating and approachable to everyone. You know, like to me, it's important to get my voice or my canvas across to as many people as possible, you know, just to understand that, like, you know, there, you know, at the end of the day, like, again, I'm going to say it's like it's more to this food of the African diaspora than what you think it is, you know.
I think that's a great. But let me ask you this, and we only got a couple more minutes here, but I just want to explore this just a little bit more. In the food of the diaspora, that a lot of the foods that we've been known for throughout the diaspora have been in tasting menu format. They might have been more big, you know, plates, or they might be more family style, but it still seems that there was a lot of courses of food that came out of the diaspora. Do you think that we're missing that type of understanding in American food culture?
You mean of course style tasting menu style dinners?
Well, I'm just saying that we have, you know, we have plenty of places that do them, but I don't think that there's necessarily an understanding from the African standpoint, or even from the Caribbean or other points of African diaspora, where there was a lot of courses, but there was probably a lot more food being served in those courses than just having just one meal, just where we all sit down in reminiscing of Thanksgiving.
Oh, no, I agree with that 100%. Because, like, I mean, I've visited Africa, and, like, you go down and sit down for dinner in someone's village or someone's house, and, you know, they welcome guests with full open arms, and it's just like, you think you're done, and there's, like, two more dishes right? coming out. So, you know, food represents, you know, a lot to ingratitude and hospitality. So, like, you know, that experience of dining on multiple dishes at a time, like even just like, you know, the typical Sunday dinner here in America, it's not just about like, you know, your mashed potatoes, meatloaf and sweet peas. It's like, it's mac and cheese, it's roast, it's turkey legs and your roasted chickens. Yeah. And you might have a little small salad over somewhere, but like that's just for auntie who, you know, talking about she's on a diet right now. So,
right. But double eggs to start, maybe some cornbread, you know, in between. But, you know, basically, you know, there we only got about a minute or so left here. And I just wanted to just find out, what are you doing now? I mean, I know that you have the your spice company, Triangular Traded Spices. You're looking forward to come back to Atlanta. And full disclosure to everyone, you know, that I am trying to recruit this gentleman to come open a new restaurant that we're working on here in Atlanta, you know, so giving him an opportunity of basically doing his interview for the job right now, you know, while we're on.
Wow, I didn't know that.
No, I'm just joking. I wouldn't do that. Yes, I would. You know, yeah. I'm just that type of person, but well, it just saved me time, you know. But I mean, really, what are you looking forward to round out 2021?
I mean, 2021 is just like, I honestly, like, I had a very hard 2020 and end of 2019, just from being in a car accident and losing multiple family members.
Oh, wow.
That, like, I'm just looking just to find stability and continue to grow as a person, as a man, as a cook, as a chef, and, you know, find ways to even just contribute more to the food and beverage industry, and even just as and contributing to you know, giving back to charities and events. Because, I launched the spice business, you know, back in November, you know, like I said, it's called Triangular Traded Spices. You know, and my, you know, even my tagline for that is just, I wanted to create, you know, I want to create spices and sauces that emulate the diversity of the world. And that's just like how I approach, you know, life and food, is just like, I want to create things that's emulating the connections that we all have throughout the world. And, you know, and going into 2021, and that's really my goal, is just to to build connections and continue to create and support, you know, my community, you know, wherever that may be at.
Absolutely. Where can everyone find you on social media?
So my Instagram itself is Chef Ophus. So that's Chef Ophus. Also, if you want to take an opportunity to purchase some of my spices, like I said, I started off with 5 spice blends. You could head over to ttspices.com. Also, you know, I'm throwing out there a 15% discount code, which is Too Much Soul. That's the number 2, you know, MUCH. SOUL. And
do you have that trademark, Too Much Soul? Do you have that trademark? I might steal that. I like that. So
that's a discount code I created specifically just for the podcast. For any user that listens to the podcast, you know, head over there, purchase some spices, and get 15% off.
That is very generous of you, and that generous spirit is something that I know you gotten from the ancestors, and I totally appreciate it. And again, I am thank you for joining me here on Soul by Todd Richards, breaking away from the Miami lifestyle that's happening down there post, you know, in COVID, which seems to be still open for business. And we welcome having you come back to Atlanta really soon. And thank you again, Chef Ophus.
Well, thank you, Chef. I greatly appreciate the opportunity. I really do.
You're listening to Soul by Todd Richards. Soul by Todd Richards is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of Food World's most innovative community? Subscribe to shows you like, tell your friends, and please, join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.